From WXXI News, this is Innovation Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Now, on this Innovation Friday, we're going to be talking about neurodiversity, and that's a term that maybe it doesn't really occur to you, especially in the context of the employment setting. But consider that between 60 and 70% of people living with autism in the United States are unemployed. We're going to talk about that, how to change that, and how not only to provide opportunity, but meaningful work opportunity across the spectrum. And I want to bring in the editor of the Innovation Trail, Matthew Leonard, the man who is responsible for so many of the great things that happen not only at innovationtrail.org, but also Innovation Friday and Connections. Hello, Matthew.
Hey, Evan. How are you doing?
Very good.
Good to be
you?
With you. Yes, thanks very much. It's a really interesting topic. Our multimedia reporter at Innovation Trail, Sasha Ann Simons, went to the inaugural job fair that was held here in Rochester a couple of weeks ago and met one of our guests who's in the studio with us today. It was a job fair specifically set up to kind of network people living with autism at different kind of ends of the spectrum, living with autism, with job opportunities and employers in the Rochester area. Globally, actually, remember this, mentioned the 60 to 70% unemployment figure. Globally, people living with autism, about 83% of the population of people with autism globally are unemployed. So it's a really very, very dramatic and drastic kind of statistic. So as soon as Sasha came back from that and filed her report, you can go on to innovationtrail.org and actually look at the report, the video report that she did. We got a book here at the office called The Autism Job Club, written by our other guest, Michael Burnick, who's on the phone with us from the West Coast. Michael, thanks very much for being with us on Innovation Friday.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And also with us, let me tell you who the other guests are. We've got Anne Harvey. Anne is president of the Dazzle School. It's a school of visual and performing arts founded in 2002. It provides arts with education programs and training to those with developmental and intellectual disabilities and mental health issues, and has a real interest in kind of looking at the welfare of people with those sort of special abilities and challenges and how the creative arts can kind of empower them and provide them with skills. And also Zachariah Banks. Nice to have you with us. Zachariah is a job hunter. Yeah. And how would you describe your relationship to autism, Zachariah?
Autism. Well, as an autistic person, just it's a way that you view the world, you know. It's really that simple. The way that you view the world and the kind of confines that a person naturally puts themselves into when they're viewing that world, you know. Like, for instance, there was a story I was reading by Dean Koontz, and it's a Frankenstein spinoff, okay, present tense Frankenstein. And Frankenstein at this point is, you know, still that hardcore scientist, and he's working on curing autism while simultaneously working on putting autism onto his test subjects, which I found really, like, compelling. You know, when they go into the character and how his mind works, there were certain mirrors to how my own autistic mind worked. You know, things like, you know, this guy does crossword puzzles all day. He's stuck inside of a box, and that's how he thinks of his world, is compartmentalized like that. In order to get out of that box, he has to think of the world as a crossword puzzle and move through those spaces in that particular way. I don't think like that. I'm not that particular kind of autistic, but that's one particular example.
Right. So it's a very, very particular and individual experience, and it can kind of manifest and have all kinds of different sort of impacts. So that's really interesting. It'd be interesting to hear more of your kind of experience. Let's go back to our guest on the phone, Michael Burnick. Michael is the co-author of the book I mentioned, The Autism Job Club. The subtitle for the book is The Neurodiverse Workforce in the New Normal of Employment. His co-author is Richard Holden. Michael is now. Michael, what was your formal title with the Department of Labor in California?
Well, I was Matthew. I was the director of our state labor department,
yep,
which in California is known as the Employment Development Department, during Governor Davis's 5 years, and have continued to be deeply involved in employment as a fellow with the Milken Institute. Mike Milken has an institute based in Santa Monica.
Right, and so tell us with your co-author Richard Holden, tell us what are the kinds of what does the book The Autism Job Club kind of lay out? What are the things that you tackled in the book?
Well, Matthew, the book is rooted in my own experiences starting in 2011 with a job club we started here in the Bay Area. We have a group, an adult group called Ascend. Here in the Bay Area, it's a group of persons on the autism spectrum, family members, advocates, a voluntary group outside of government, extra-governmental, that's really come together for mutual support. And we decided to see how working together we might improve that very high unemployment rate that you mentioned. And so the book partially talks about our experiences over the past 4 years and looks more generally at experiences elsewhere throughout the United States in terms of initiatives by companies like Walgreens, Best Buy, SAP to bring more adults on the spectrum into employment. It looks at other small businesses started by family members and persons on the spectrum. Everything from car washes to agricultural communities to create jobs. And it looks at various job coaching attempts to help persons on the spectrum both find jobs and retain jobs in a variety of settings.
Right, and also to for our readers, our listeners as well, there's some really interesting background on things like some other topics that we'll get to a bit later in the hour, reemergence of craft. I'm interested in your thoughts on the minimum wage debate in this context as well. So just tell us how the job club works. What do you mean when you say a job club?
Well, it's very informal. We meet on a regular basis. People come and go. Part of the job club is various techniques of how to use job boards, how to network, how to interview, how to create a resume, which are applicable to our autism community as well as to all workers. There's really no sharp distinction between how adults on the spectrum should be looking for jobs that's different from other sort of neurotypical, as we say, neurotypical adults. So we try to master some of those techniques. What is different, Matthew, is that we do encourage our members to work with job coaches. We call them autism job coaches, people who know our community well. And in terms of both mastering the techniques and implementing them. So part of it is to master the techniques, or at least be aware of and try to apply the techniques applicable to all workers today in terms of how best to find a job and to do them both supporting each other and working with a job coach.
Right. And I'm just going to come to one of our other guests, Anne Harvey, in a second. But Michael, do you have a family connection? Do you have a family member with autism?
Yes. My son, William, who's now 25, is on the spectrum. So I've been in the autism community, Matthew, since 1991. And I will say things have changed dramatically in terms of the social prominence of autism. Today, in 1991, if people knew of autism, they knew of it mainly through Rain Man, or the film. today, you can't pick up a book or go on the internet or pick up a newspaper without some reference to autism. So
right,
there's a great sea change.
Right.
Yeah.
Zachary is saying there are comic books about it. And I think, Zachary, you're 24,
Zachary,
right?
That's right. You can't. Right. Throughout popular, I think, Zachary, right, you've probably seen this. In popular culture, autism has changed. There's been a sea change. All around. What hasn't changed as much, and it's just beginning to change, is the role of our community, the autism community, in employment. That hasn't changed in the same way that popular culture has changed.
And, with the neurodiversity thing, my girlfriend, she read a book, How to Rewire Your Brain, and just, certain habits that people have developed, think of, things like that, an autistic person will, you know, have a tendency to really need someone to be like, yo, you know, like a gun to the head. Hey, get up. It's time to go. Because, you know, an autistic person, at least this is what I've been told, doesn't really tend to have enough of the chemical to wake up in the morning, or has to, you know, do certain things. You know, I know for a fact that I have to do a lot of rigorous tasks over and over again just to keep my brain from doing wacky things, you know?
What's an example, Zachary, of when some of the rigorous tasks that you feel yourself doing over and over again?
Well, my father taught me a lot of Qigong exercises when I was a kid. And then I expounded upon that by taking martial arts manuals and things like that and learning those styles and creating my own style. I practice martial arts just mostly purely for exercise, but I practice martial arts. So that's one of the things. And it's the basic exercises. I tend to go through them once during the morning, once in the evening, something like that. Sometimes the sessions will last up to 3 hours.
3 hours?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a short session. Then I'll play video games.
Well, but if I could just interject with a question, because I think, as Michael and Zachary have pointed out, I think maybe a generation ago, Rain Man was the extent of a lot of understanding or sort of popular cultural
more
image
like
of autism.
Yes.
And Michael, if you're just joining us, is co-author of The Autism Job Club. Zacharia in studio is living with Asperger's Syndrome. He's on the job hunt, as we've said. Ann Harvey's here, president of the Dazzle School, on this Innovation Friday. But so much of what I'm hearing now, Michael, and you can address this, I think, as can our panel, about job placement for people with autism is understanding, of course, every person is different. Every person has different interests. But even take an example like the fictional character of Rain Man, who was, of course, so keyed into mathematics and things like that. What I'm hearing lately, Michael, is that instead of trying to, quote-unquote, normalize someone with autism and get them away from these intense interests, whether it's crosswords all day or mathematics or whatever sort of intense interest that may happen, instead of saying, well, that's abnormal, let's normalize you, let's pull you off that, trying to find a work context within some of those specialized hyper skills or interests.
Like they have super skills.
Yeah, I mean, Matthew, it was first brought to my attention not long after the movie came out, that the head of Kinko's, which is a very large, or used to be, it was brought up by FedEx, copying company, came and he had the same observation. Why is this guy being institutionalized? With his skills, isn't there some work, an actuarial work or some other form that he can put these skills into application? And I think that's the way to look at it. What are the skills? How can now in practice, I will tell you, it is very, very, very difficult to do. But I think that's the approach to try to look at not, you know, what are the limitations, but what are the particular skills that our community, the autism community, and other neurodiverse communities have, and how can they be applied?
So that's a good segue into Ann Harvey. I'd like to ask you, because you're the Dazzle School. Part of what you do, as I understand, is you have a school respite program, right?
Yes,
so
yes,
for the Office of People with Developmental Disabilities. So you must be seeing a really rich range of incredibly talented individuals with all kinds of different levels of skills and interests and obsessions and so on. Do you want to give us a little sense of what you're sort of seeing from your...
Well, I've been in this business working with those with developmental and intellectual disabilities for 48 years, and I see I opened Dazzle School of Visual and Performing Arts in 2002, and we got our state certifications. And the people, the individuals that we serve, I would say first of all, probably 80%. Are on the autism spectrum. And what I've seen over all the years I've been working with these individuals, because I formerly, before I opened Dazzle, worked for the state of New York, in the same field at with OPWDD. And what I'm seeing is, and it isn't getting, it's getting a little better, but it's not getting as better as I wish it would. I think the general public does not have the understanding of what these individuals, no matter what age, go through. They don't have the understanding that someone like myself does, because I've worked with it for so long. That doesn't mean that I know everything. You're always learning, and things, again, are always changing. But one thing I see on a daily basis is I think the general public are a little bit afraid. There's a fear of being around people with developmental, intellectual, and physical disabilities. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's their fault. Mm-hmm. They aren't familiar, you know, like Zachariah is or I am, because it's our life. It's his life, it's mine. And I think that if the general public were more educated, I have to comment on a program that Dazzle School did about 3 summers ago. We're very integrated with the community, and we have several programs. In fact, we have a couple coming up this summer as well that are integrating the Rochester community kids with our kids with disabilities. And 3 years ago, I started a program. I designed a program at Dazzle called Kids Helping Kids. And I decided to invite the community children and pair them at Dazzle with a disabled child about their age, more intellectually their age. And so it was an oil painting and drawing on canvas for them to learn. And what they had to do is they had these little teams of kids had to go around Rochester, and they had to find something in the city of Rochester they wanted to paint. So it was twofold. They learned a lot about Rochester, too. And when I visited the classroom where the art instructor was working with the kids, they had these little pairs of kids, and they each had a buddy. And I did it so they would understand each other. It would cut down on bullying. And I heard a conversations like this. "You look funny." "Well, I have autism, ha ha, you don't. I'm better than you." And of course, "Well, what's autism? I don't know what that," but just still. But to the disabled child, the non-disabled looked funny. So it was a twofold. And by the time after 10 weeks, they were all best friends. No bullying, no nasty remarks, no picking. It was just I achieved what I wanted to, so this summer we have the Circus Arts Experience coming, and we're going to do the same thing with the community and our kids.
So this, we've got a caller on the line we'll get to in just a sec. I just wanted to, Michael Burnick from the Autism Job Club, that sounds very much like a kind of a picture of this idea of neurodiversity, of acknowledging and kind of expounding difference, the differences between people and the kind of different ways that people can approach things, rather than this process of normalization. Could you just talk a little bit more about what's important about this idea of neurodiversity in the big picture that we're talking about?
Well, first let me say I think Susan's program is excellent, and especially starting young, I think that's good. The neurodiversity movement is more generally, Matthew, one of saying, "Hey, I'm not damaged, or need to be repaired or improved. I bring certain strengths," and I think continues to be the core value of it. And from an employment point of view, the challenge is how to build on those strengths.
Right.
And it's not an easy process. It's one we're still learning about. My sense is that in terms of autism employment, we're still at a very initial stage. But what is striking, if you look here in, well, throughout the United States, here in California and throughout the United States, is the amount of energy going on local levels, driven a lot by, frankly, the fierce energy of parents, as this cohort of persons on the spectrum ages from high school on. The energy and the activity going on, as I say, on the local levels, to try to build these employment models. And I think that's where we're going to look. We're not the federal government. We're not going to find it there. I think it's these grassroots levels, often outside of government, often of mutual support, building these structures.
Yeah, on that note, let's welcome Luana Jones on the phone from the Autism Council of Rochester, who has just called in. Hi, Luana.
Hi there. Good afternoon.
Thanks for taking the time to call the program.
And sure, no problem.
And Luana's one of the people that's featured in our report that I mentioned at the top of the program. Luana's one of the movers behind the Autism Job Fair. And Luana, I guess, do you want to just talk a little bit about the, the impetus for organizing the job fair to network people with autism and local employers?
Sure. So to kind of piggyback on what I just heard the other caller mention, we, as the Autism Council, looked at a different model because the other model wasn't working. So to create something a little unique, reach out to the businesses directly that we know hire people with disabilities and work together to provide opportunities for young adults who are on the spectrum. And the employers, frankly, some of the biggest ones in Rochester were more than eager to attend the job fair. And we considered it a success because we had over 100 attendees. Mm. So, of course, we know the need is there. It's just coming up with a different model to match our young adults with employment.
And what do you think is motivating? Like, you know, what are employers telling you in terms of why, you know, why they are showing this level of interest?
Well, it's twofold, right? Of course, as an employer, you've got some business goals that you're looking to meet, but also add diversity in the workplace, which, you know, our young adults with autism definitely bring a different set of skills. And then also, you know, the available tax breaks that they're able to actually get. So it's a win-win on both sides. That's for sure.
So I'm interested in, I hadn't heard of the tax breaks kind of dimension to this. So that's an interesting, that's part of the of job creation programs or of subsidized job creation programs?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Right, cool. So Michael Burnick, you mentioned companies like Walgreens. You talk a bit about them in the book, The Autism Job Club. What sort of precedence has companies like that sort of set in terms of their strategies for hiring people with...
That's an important point. What distinguishes Walgreens, I think, from a number of the other initiatives is it's not just hiring persons on the spectrum. It's a culture change within the company. In other words, they've started with their distribution centers, and it's a matter of first getting a buy-in from all of the management at the distribution center in terms of a certain patience, flexibility as people, you know, master skills, a certain patience with perhaps rigid behaviors or other, non-typical behaviors. But it's a workplace culture and retention model that goes beyond just targeting the hiring. My sense is that's what makes it work there. That's what makes it work at SAP. That's what makes it work at Best Buy. Microsoft has just started a small, only 10 people, but small autism at work model. And it's a model that incorporates both targeted hiring, but also, to me, even more importantly, this workplace culture.
Luana Jones, does that jive with you? Idea of work, it's not just hiring, it's also, you're also asking them to sort of make some adjustments in the culture of their workplace or their corporation sometimes, right?
I would agree. And prior to the job fair, actually sitting down with a couple of the companies that were there having that discussion and understanding that, you know, there are available services to the corporations to help them with the cultural piece. So also not just you know, getting an individual who's on the spectrum in, like Michael said, but to also make sure that you retain them. And it is a difference in the workplace for, you know, the coworkers. Just getting everyone on board and being supportive. There's a local company here. They have a peer support program within their corporation. And so just getting someone on board who has Asperger's, but also teaming them up with a coworker as a peer situation and providing that support also. So
right.
He's absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely.
Loretta, I don't know if you've seen it, but a lot of our members have gotten jobs. They lose the jobs. You know, they do certain behaviors or they're not quick enough or so forth. So, I mean, I think this retention piece, frankly, covering one's back right. or helping, you know, it is an important component.
Like a lot of autistics prefer sometimes to actually work alone. A lot of autistics who are extremely, extremely, extremely intelligent will look at you with your pairing and say, "What the F is that? Why are you trying to put me with this person who's less intelligent than me?" So all I'm saying is, like, it really, really, really depends on the person. And, I mean, like, you know, a job is a job is a job, but getting there, actually having the function to get there, actually having the ability to wake up, actually having people on your side is, like, it's paramount, you know. As an autistic person, it's not just like, you know, I woke up myself, great, now let's go and get to work. It's more like I woke up myself, but my body is telling me that I really should go back to sleep and not care about anything else. Or I woke up, had this really awesome agenda, I'm going to go out and do it, perceive it, take it over, but there's people who are being rude or being violent on the street, and that's affecting my brain waves, you know, or inside of the workplace. You know, you're talking about workplace behavior. You know, a person who is autistic walks into a situation where people are being people, rowdy, bullies, maybe they're friendly. But the things that you put into a person's brain, you know, the thing that you put into a person's, environment into their reality is going to shape the way that they're going to perceive you. And for an autistic person, that's doubly so, because it's either they're going to blank you out or they're going to take too much of what you have and they might put that back at you.
Can I ask you, Zachary, and I know we're running late, we've got to get to a break in a moment here, but I want to just follow up that point and ask you, are you concerned about your own future employment because of the way people may perceive some of your actions or conversations or reactions because of your autism, even if you don't intend to, perhaps, as you say, take the context of a situation, a conversation, something that happens on the way to work, and all of a sudden that impacts you. And the employer may be saying, "Zachariah, we can't have this. I can't keep you around."
Right, right.
And are you worried that that barrier exists for your own future state of employment?
Well, I've been taught to speak my mind. That being said, when an employer has a disagreement with me, I try my best to put myself on equal grounds. A lot of people in my situation aren't taught that. Like, I wasn't taught how to deal with people until I was like 12 years old. And that was by my father, who noticed that I was always walking around staring at the ground, never looked anybody in the face. You know, I wouldn't shake your hand and then look you in the eye. I would look at your shoes. You know, it's simple things. But, so I have a boss, right? Or just hypothetical. Mm-hmm. I have a boss, and, you know, the train was late. I was late for work. Do I curse him out? No. Do I want to? Yes. As an autistic person, am I more likely to? Probably so. I'm not saying that all autistics are like that, but that's what it is. What's worrisome about keeping a job isn't so much the environment of the job itself, but how that's going to affect my home environment, you know? Like, when I go home and I'm dealing with the other people in my environment, am I bringing that stuff back with me, you know? Like, for instance, I worked at a bakery. No names dropped. Worked at a bakery. A lot of very hood people, you know, which is cool, but the girl that I live with, not very hood, you know? So when I absorb hoodness into me and then come home and talk to my girlfriend and I have hood mannerisms leaking off of my body, that's gonna cause some contention, okay? And that's one example, a very small example of how that could cause some contention. A normal person might be able to come home and be like, all right, work is over, I'm the same person, let's do this, you know? But I have to let the gradual changes that have waterfalled over me change me and then come back to the person I was when I woke up.
So interesting. Before we get to a break, then, some comments then from Luana Jones. And I know we have other guests who we have to take calls from, but Luana, just some thoughts about that before we let you go?
No, first of all, I just want to thank Zachary. I had a chance to meet him at the job fair.
Oh, you're welcome.
He's one of my favorite people. I just need to say that also. But I think he's right, and definitely some things that as an employer would need to consider as someone supporting Zachariah, family members. I mean, we all need to be cognizant of what's going to help them be successful. So I would agree. Point well taken.
Luana Jones,
I was just going to say I spoke all over my co-host Matthew Leonard, but Luana, thanks for taking the time to call the program.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me.
From the Autism Council of Rochester. And let's get that break, and then the conversation continues in a moment. Matthew Leonard, once again, let our listeners know who our guests are for the hour.
Still with us, Michael Burnick, co-author of the Autism Job Club, Zachariah Banks, and Anne Harvey from the Dazzle School. We're going to have a short break, and we'll be right back with another commentator.
Coming up in our second hour of Innovation Friday, the future of cybersecurity as seen by someone who should know, the director of security operations for Facebook with 1.5 billion active users. We'll get Jennifer Henley's perspective on the future of cybersecurity. Then we're talking about the rental market at a 20-year high. What does that mean for cities and communities? It's next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Wealth Strategies Group at Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, offering financial planning strategies that are tailored to clients' needs. Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, investing in you.
Welcome back to Innovation Friday. I'm on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, joined by the editor of the Innovation Trail, that's Matthew Leonard, who's going to introduce our next guest who's on the line with us. Matthew?
Thanks, Evan. Yes. Just before the break, we were talking, and Zachariah was talking a lot about people at home, people in life, and we've heard the importance of family members, job coaches, that kind of thing. We just wanted to talk to Evelyn Evans. Evelyn is Zachariah's aunt who's joining us. She's traveling at the moment. She's normally in Rochester, but she's in Chicago. Evelyn, thanks very much for dialing into the show.
Thank you.
So we heard, I'm not sure how much you heard, but Zachariah was just doing a pretty good job of kind of talking about some of the challenges of interacting in the workplace and, you know, the tensions between work and home. And as a family member who's kind of supporting him, do you want to just talk a little bit about what you're seeing in terms of the challenges getting into the workplace and the job market?
What I've found is there is limited assistance. We're just beginning to tap in to some of the resources in Rochester. I talked to Luana Jones, who was just on at the Autism Council, because we ran across a flyer about the job fair that she was hosting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was great for Zach. He made several contacts. We updated his resume. We will be getting that out to Ms. Luana Jones for some assistance. But what I find is when Zach, because of his Asperger's, that everybody is so different in how the disorder affects them, that he needs a position where an employer will understand, or at least we could coach them to help them understand what his needs are, because he's an excellent communicator, but he does have some body clock issues that make things difficult for him to move and wake and be up like before the crack of dawn. So if an employer could understand that, that would be very helpful for him individually.
Ironically, I was reading an Ayurveda book, and it described my body type. cross between one type that metabolizes things fast and another type that metabolizes things slow and takes about 2 hours to actually get up to speed. I find that it takes me about 2 hours to just get up, wake up, then wake up with my brain, you know, those cells. I'm thinking about doing that thing that the detective did on Twin Peaks and just upside down over a pillow, just doing headstands against the wall.
But you were saying, Zachary, as well, before the show started, you were talking about when your brain really works well, which is at night.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the flip side of what you're saying, Evelyn, that it's also how to take advantage maybe of those, you know, of the way that Zachariah's mind works putting that to, you know, to his advantage, right?
That's correct. Because he does work better at night, does he need some position that works in the evening, and that employer understanding that, you know, you can't switch his hours around. You really need to stay in whatever set job hours that were created for him that best works for him, which probably would be evening.
Well, let me kick it over to Michael Burnick then again, the co-author of the Autism Job Club, who's on the line with us now. You've been hearing Zachariah talk about his own experience and perhaps his own challenges as he looks for employment, Michael, and every person is different, but I'm certain you've heard these kinds of questions and issues before. And so what do we all learn from that? Tell me a little bit more about what employers can do and how the landscape starts to shift to accommodate and better accommodate people like Zachariah.
Well, I think there are a couple things. First, let me say he's lucky to have an aunt like Miss Evans. We all need people like that to work with us, and that's a very important component. In terms of accommodation, it does have to go both ways. I mean, I've stressed earlier the success of Walgreens and the others in terms of their own flexibility, but we also have to keep in mind that despite the improvement in the economy, employers still have a lot of choices. They're often getting 10, 20, 100 applicants for each place. So, I mean, they have their own demands. They can find a lot of other workers. So it is a balancing.
Right.
You know, we do want to push for a certain flexibility, but we in the autism community have to change behavior. And that's something that, you know, we work on here. In other words, yes, you can ask for certain accommodations, but not too much.
Right.
In other words, the accommodations have to go both sides. So, yeah, there may be a job at night, but, you know,
actually,
that's a tough thing.
Realistically, and I'm not trying to be rude here, realistically, when you walk into a job and ask them for a job, they will tell you that most of the daytime slots are taken away. I'm autistic. My brain works better at night. A lot of people who aren't autistic, their brains work with the sun. So I actually am more likely to get a job at night. But that's besides the point. I'm on the East Coast. I don't know how it works on the West Coast. Anyway.
Well, it works the same way here in the sense of, yeah, you ought to, if that's the way you know, you see your strengths, look at something at night. But you also have to be open for changing your behavior.
Of course.
You gotta
work on yourself.
Thing.
Yeah.
You know, we all need to fit into, basically, we're not going to dramatically change the structure of workplaces. And given the great competition that still exists, even in the so-called recovery, for almost any job today, employers have a lot of other choices. And they have a lot of other pressures and need to get the work out and so forth. So, in that sense, I've emphasized before the flexibility of employers, but the other side of it is we need to try to
be more flexible.
You know, yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Zach, right?
Anne Harvey, you wanted to jump in there.
I just want to say that I know, Michael, you mentioned job coaches. We do have a program at Dazzle where we were actually approached by the Thomas Golisano Foundation to the director of that program asked me if I would work with a young gentleman, 22 years old, on job skills. He comes with a job coach. So he has been coming to Dazzle School and working there with his job coach for about 6 months now. And he's done a little bit of everything, a lot of everything. And the job coach and I work together to see what would be best for him, what would not be the best fit for him, so he can learn skills. He's doing an excellent job, and it's our goal at Dazzle School to advance that program. So, you know, we call it the Quinn program, and it's working very, very well. So I was really happy to hear you refer to job coaches help. Also, I want to be very clear that Dazzle School does employ some people with developmental disabilities, including autism.
Thanks, Anne. So I had a question. Evelyn, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Hey, so I just had a question, and this came up in the report from the job fair. There were some people with autism who were saying that that people with autism can tend to be pigeonholed, that the jobs that they're offered are kind of a certain kind of job. They can be janitorial jobs, or they can be. What's your feeling about that? Is that something that you see, you know, that the kind of range of jobs can be quite limited because of assumptions about people's skills when they're living with autism somewhere on the spectrum?
Yes, and I did notice that, unfortunately, at that fair, but as Ms. Jones had stated at that time, that, you know, they tried to, this is the first time they had ever done it, and they tried to capture as many people, employers, as they could, but when I went around to the tables, they were correct. It was a lot of those menial janitorial jobs, and you guys are sitting talking with my nephew.
Like,
you know, his communication skills are on a high level. He's very intelligent. If it was not for that disability, he probably would be like in some gifted program, because even when he was 11 and 12, he talked about things I didn't understand. I would have to go look it up.
Right.
You know more than he did. So to really take folks and say you can only do cleaning jobs, and you can only take out the trash, and you can only wipe off the tables because you're autistic, have autism, that's not their legacy. There are so many more things that can be done and taught and trained. And just like anybody else, all of us are individuals. Find what they love and make that into employment. Find them some employment on the issues that they love to do. Because really, they have a wide range of skill sets. And to see, you know, somebody who can actually is very good at computers, just taking out the trash and wiping down the bathroom, is amazing.
Right. And this is there's a chapter in the Autism Job Club, Michael Burnick, Autism Craft and Calling, where you touch exactly on this issue about developing a more sophisticated sense of what skills. What the enormous sort of potential skills that can be unlocked from people with autism, and, you know, being matched with very, very high-end tasks, not the kind of, you know, labor and janitorial jobs that we've just been talking about.
Well, it is a range. I mean, I think that craft is an important element, and we often hear from employers that persons on the spectrum make better employees in terms of attention to detail.
Yeah.
In terms of loyalty, in terms of focus on the job, not true of everyone, as Ms. Evans said, sort of similar to what Temple Grandin says, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
Exactly.
Right. Range.
Exactly.
That's so good.
But it is true that we ought to look at the ways that persons with autism and other neurodiverse conditions bring better focus, attention, loyalty than perhaps other employees.
Mm-hmm. And you jumped in there.
I would like to kind of piggyback on what you, Ms. Evans, were saying about the different types of jobs. You are exactly correct. And sometimes I'm sure that it makes some of our individuals feel that, you know, they're just plain not as good as the other guy, or there's something wrong with them or weird about them. But I can tell you that in our program we call the Quinn program, this young man is building all new fencing around Dazzle School's properties. Mm-hmm. He's sawing, he's cutting. Of course, he's got his job coach with him, and he's doing a fantastic job. So, I hope you, like myself and all of us here, really understand that there are people out there that hire these individuals and work with these individuals and train these individuals for some of those jobs that you so well express should be offered.
Well, here's what I see for that young man. He loves to build things. So once his job coach helps him, you know, get his niche, we should be introducing him to somebody in the building trade so that he can get a good union job.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me say, Matthew, there's nothing wrong with jobs. I think we'd all agree there's jobs. Any work is dignity, and jobs wiping tables or cleaning up are just as good and probably of greater value than most of what else is being done in the labor market. I think the point is only we don't want to limit it.
Right. Yeah. It was more. My point was more just about the tendency to kind of pigeonhole and maybe overlook other potential skills. But so a couple of minutes left, Zachariah. I just want to get a sense of your dream job. What is your dream job if you thought about it?
Well, let's see. Well, it'd be centered around the things I like to do, so...
A little closer to the mic there, Zachary. Go ahead. Yep.
Let's see. We have... I like to play guitar, so music teacher could be an option. I don't know, though. Personally, I prefer to be able to travel around the country, meet new people, play music, talk to people. You know, that's really my favorite thing to do, if I had to tell you. But, as far as, like, a job, just sitting down, you know... I'm willing to do labor, menial tasks, whatever. I've been taught how to clean by my mother. She's very good at teaching. That's one of the main things that she does. My OCD kicks in. I can clean everything as long as I'm not too tired. I might pass out. So, I mean, I could be a janitor. I don't want to be a janitor. You know what I'm saying? I could do a better job than most janitors on the job and faster. But I don't want to do that job because even though I'd be good at that job, it would put me inside of a bucket, quite literally. No, I want to pick up and actually be able to go out with my band, play music, and then I want to go home, I want to write, and I want to be able to, write stories or write about music theory or whatever. And then I want to say... invest in inventions that I've created, like mm-hmm. musical instruments for the most part. And I also would like to create computer programs. Literally, all these things in the sphere, to a lot of people, they sound like a bunch of different stuff that you have to work on separately. But to me, it sounds like engineering and physics, literally. That's what it is. That's what it all is. Mm-hmm. Engineering, physics, a little bit of history, some historical aspects to the things. But that's the basic thing. I just want to be able to work with my hands, play music.
Michael Burnick, the Autism Job Club, the neurodiverse workforce in the new norm of employment, has the internet, the job market on the internet, do you think that's helped or hindered people on the spectrum?
Well, I think it provides a number of new opportunities in terms of some of our members already trying to take advantage of the ability to sell things on the internet that they have, to create internet businesses. Certainly groups like Kiva that have arisen on the internet to fund and any of the crowdfunding sources to fund enterprises. It's still, I think, a very, very small element in terms of, but it provides some way for our community as well as the general economy to create other forms of work and forms of income. So it's, I wouldn't say, Matthew, it's a key element in terms of our employment strategy as an autism community, but it's one element.
Yeah.
That's Michael Burnick, the author of the Autism Job Club, taking the time to join us. Book obviously available now. And Michael, thanks for the insight that you've shared with us all hour on Innovation Friday.
Thank you for having me.
And to the rest of our guests in studio and on the line with us, Matthew
Evelyn,
Leonard, it's been a great
thanks
hour.
Thanks to Evelyn Evans, Zachariah's aunt, who's in Chicago. Thanks for taking the time away from your conference, Evelyn, to join us.
I appreciate it, and I'm so glad that Zach was able to participate in this level, because I think it just is going to continue to boost his confidence, and I really appreciate it.
He doesn't need any help boosting his confidence.
He's kind of a guy.
Zachariah Banks,
a smart man.
Thanks on the job hunt. Zachariah Banks, thank you very much for being with us. And Anne Harvey, thank you to President of the Dazzle School here in Rochester. A lot of links up on the Innovation Trail website and WXXI News. Links to all these people and their books right now. And you can also check out the original video report on innovationtrail.org. It's right at the top of the story queue at the moment.
All right, back with Hour 2 of Innovation Friday.